90.7 The Capstone on the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. B.J. Gunther, and I'm the host of the show. And we've been off for a couple of weeks due to 90.7 broadcasting the Bama men's basketball game. So we're glad to be back tonight. In case you don't know, the show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, and in particular, UA students. You can listen to us live each Tuesday night on 90.7 FM at 6 o'clock or online at www.wvuafm.ua.edu. And tonight we'll be taking questions via email. So if you have them, please email questions to brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. Let me remind you, this is not a call-in show, so I ask that you don't call into the station with questions at this time. But as I mentioned just a minute ago, you can email us questions at brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. Also, if you have any ideas, email me some ideas. If you have any ideas for upcoming show topics for the fall, we don't do shows in the summer, and we've already got most of our shows planned for the rest of this semester. But if you have any ideas that you kind of want to see if we'd be willing to do, we could use some help with some ideas, so email me. We've been off for the past 2 weeks, as I mentioned, because of the basketball games. Next week is spring break, so we won't have a show. When we left a couple of weeks ago, our last show was actually on public speaking fears, which I know a lot of students deal with, and that was a fantastic show. It is recorded, podcasted on the Counseling Center website, and I'll talk more about that at the end of tonight's show. Tonight, we're discussing a topic that I've wanted to feature for a long time, because any magazine that you pick up now, a lot of times you will find articles about mindfulness, and I want to talk tonight about the difference between mindfulness and relaxation. Why is that term used now? My guest tonight is somebody that I'm just so glad to actually meet in person, because Dr. Harriet Myers is my guest. She's a clinical psychologist, and she actually spoke, I guess it was about 2 months ago, at a student affairs divisional meeting about mindfulness, and I was very intrigued by her presentation, and so I thought this would be a good idea to invite her to come on the show. But I've actually known of Dr. Myers. She's been around for a long time, and I'm pretty good friends with your former secretary, Sue Morris.
Oh, wonderful.
I know.
And she's such a good woman.
And so she, I kind of knew of you through her, and I knew that you, tell us a little bit, this is intriguing to me, and it might be intriguing to some of our listeners. Tell us a little bit about your sailing journey.
Oh, my sailing journey. Yeah. It was a really wonderful support and a facilitator for my mindfulness practice. My husband grew up on saltwater and always wanted to sail. And so we said, when we retire, we'll sail. And then we decided we might be too old and decrepit to sail if we waited until retirement age. Right. And so he actually hit retirement age for being a pilot, which is earlier than for being a psychologist for the most part. And he said, let's go now. So we just went. And we were on the water for around 5 years, lived on board for about 5 years.
Where all did you sail?
We didn't do the big oceans, uh-huh, because I didn't really want to do the big, mm-hmm, oceans. But we did all up and down the island chain, all the way down to South America, all through the Bahamas. Spent some time in on Hispaniola, some time in Cuba, all the different Caribbean islands.
Yeah.
And so it was really a wonderful experience in terms of meeting wonderful, funny, smart, and creative people, and learning just how to live simply again. It was very wonderful.
Yeah, and you also found a dog.
Oh, we did. We rescued him from... We say he's a Venezolano barrio dog, which is the slum, and we rescued him from the slum in Venezuela when we were there on our boat,
uh-huh,
and he's just a wonderful, loyal, and very smart dog.
And lucky. Thank you. Tell us a little bit about your background. I know I introduced you as a clinical psychologist, but give us a little bit of your background, how you got to Tuscaloosa, what you focused what populations you enjoy working with the most, that kind of thing.
Thank you. Well, you should know that I grew up in the Midwest on a farm, and so that's really part of my background. And I thought I wanted to be a veterinarian, and then I sort of diverted from that because people didn't think I should be dealing with the big animals that I wanted to treat, like horses and cows. And so I decided being a nurse would work fine. So my first profession is nursing, and uh-huh. my bachelor's and master's are in nursing. And then I realized how much I really love working with the psychological and emotional issues that occur in folks' lives, and particularly during a physical illness. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I did the PhD in psychology.
Hmm. I didn't know that about you. I didn't know you had a nursing background.
Yes, yes.
How did you get involved with mindfulness?
I think that probably I became aware of about how rapidly thoughts move through my own mind, mm-hmm. and how sometimes because of that rapidity that it's hard to hold on to a goal or complete a project that one might want to do. Mm-hmm. And then I began to see how that really happened with people who were having significant emotional problems or physical problems. And so I really wanted to look for a universal intervention that people can do at any time, mm-hmm. in any place, that I could teach them. And that's something very different than psychotherapy, which means you go in and seek another person. I wanted to be able to give folks a way to really work with either a distressing issue in front of them, or to work with chronic physical problems, mm-hmm. that they could use any time of the day or night, 7 days a week.
You know, in the introduction I mentioned that I feel like everywhere I look right now, you know, in print media, is an article or something about mindfulness. Is that correct? Is it kind of like the sexy
thing? It's really the in vogue. It is the in vogue thing right now. I sort of started with mindfulness when it really wasn't quite so popular,
yeah.
back in the late 80s and early 90s. And so I think the reason that it's being discussed in so many places is that it has such universal positive benefits for people who actually practice, and also because it is so difficult to actually practice on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
My statement is that it's the simplest, most difficult practice, mm-hmm. I've ever attempted.
Yeah. What about, and we're going to talk a little more in detail about working with college students and how difficult it is sometimes to ask college students to do something that can take a little bit of practice to be able to master. It's hard sometimes to convince a college student of that. But what I want to ask you first before we go to a break, what's the difference between mindfulness and relaxation training? Is mm-hmm. there a difference?
Yes, okay. There is. Yes. Let me just give you, before we break, a basic definition of mindfulness.
Okay.
And this is from Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's the person who brought the secular psychological notions of mindfulness to us through something called mindfulness-based stress reduction. And Kabat-Zinn says, mindfulness is the awareness that emerges through paying attention in the present moment, on purpose, and non-judgmentally. So paying attention in the present moment is something very difficult because most of us are in the past,
mm-hmm.
or in the future,
right.
in our brains. And it doesn't matter whether we're trying to listen to somebody else or trying to study for a test tomorrow. Hmm. We're busy worrying about that we said that thing that turned out to be insulting to our professor, and oh, how I wished I hadn't done that. Or, oh my gosh, how am I ever going to prepare for all the things I have to do tomorrow?
That's it.
So we tend not to stay in the moment much at all.
And that's the difficulty.
And that's mm-hmm. the difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And so relaxation can be done by thinking about a relaxing scene or
listening to music,
tensing,
even.
Yeah, mm-hmm. tensing and relaxing parts mm-hmm. of the body, listening to music. But that is not so focused on just paying attention to what's going on right now.
Uh-huh.
And we can talk about what things you notice. But sometimes that's boring, and sometimes we just can't do it. Our mind wanders off, because then it goes off to those things we worry about.
Let's go to a break right now, and then when we come back, I want to ask you, you know, before we went on the air, we talked about, you know, what does your mind do on its own? So I want to ask that question when we come back from break.
Great.
We're talking to Dr. Harriet Myers about mindfulness. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
I'm Kayla Burrell, outfielder for the Crimson Tide, and you're listening to the voice of the University of Alabama, WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa. Roll Tide.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I am BJ Gunther, and we're talking tonight with Dr. Harriet Myers, a clinical psychologist. We're talking about mindfulness, which is very intriguing to a lot of people, and we hear this term. I actually had a student not long ago come in and request to be trained to be more mindful. And Dr. Myers just gave us the definition of what mindfulness is. Bottom line is, Dr. Myers, it means to focus your thoughts on one thing?
Yes, it's almost like going one level above your thoughts and focusing your awareness on what's going on right now. And it might be you notice, for instance, right now I notice that I am talking. Or I might notice that I'm thinking, and then I try to notice what I'm thinking about. But, you know, mostly our thinking is automatic, and we don't even hardly grab it.
Right.
But when you're being mindful, you have the awareness that notices the thought that might be starting, the body sensation that your knee hurts or your tummy is upset.
Mm-hmm.
It may notice an emotion that you're feeling sad or angry. But those are the things. You may just notice, oh, I'm hearing a sound. Oh, so I'm smelling something sweet.
So what are the benefits of that? And maybe I'm jumping way far ahead.
No. Let me talk about the benefits by talking about what we tend to do when we're not being mindful.
Okay.
What we've learned is that neuropsychological laboratories all over the world have sort of independently come up with the same data for what happens when a mind is sort of just hanging out. A mind is not actively solving a math problem or something. What happens when we're just kind of hanging out? And there are two or three things. One is that the mind is almost constantly critical. We're either critical of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Oh, what a stupid thing I said. Oh, dear, this dress is all wrinkled and everybody's going to think I'm a slob. That kind of thing. Or we're critical of others. My teacher isn't very well prepared today.
Right.
So we have the critical streak, and then we have that part I mentioned before, the sort of time travel, where we're back in the past regretting that we did something that we did, regretting that an action occurred, or we're busy planning for the future. And when we plan, we're always worrying about it, and we're writing fiction stories about what is going to happen.
Yeah.
Usually catastrophe stories about what is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, what happens when we get to the event is nothing like the catastrophe that we wrote in our mind. So when you think that that's where our minds sort of naturally go, it's no wonder that we're anxious or stressed if that's what our mind kind of does. Unfortunately, our mind does not help us in terms of being calm or centered.
Exactly.
So we have to train it. And we train it by being in the present moment. And when we work to be in the present moment, then we can notice the first thing that happens is usually we're quiet. Our body is quiet when we're doing mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
We might be doing yoga, like Linda will talk about soon,
okay,
or walking slowly, but we're usually moving in slow motion or not moving at all. And so when our body starts to quiet, then our mind sort of slows down a little bit. Our thoughts aren't running through as fast. And so if we're actively, consciously paying attention to what's going on, we can actually notice when we start to think about something. And we can say, oh, there I go again. I'm worrying again.
Mm-hmm.
And we can just invite ourselves back from it.
So some of it is awareness.
Oh, it's the whole
All
story.
Of it's awareness.
And yes.
What does our mind do on its own?
Oh, it.
Wonders.
Worries.
Worries. Obsesses.
It regrets. It obsesses. It criticizes other people and ourselves. So when you think about that, that whole ball of wax there, it's negative. All of criticizing and worrying and regretting are all negative. Very seldom to our minds. And you can remember some of the times where your mind hangs out in something that was pleasant in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the usual place for our mind to hang out. And all of us tend to have a preferred place where our mind hangs out. I happen to be a planner. And I plan because I fear that I'm not going to
be prepared,
look good, or people aren't going to love me, or whatever my reason is. But I'm always planning far more than I need to be. So that's where my mind hangs out. You might find out that your mind hangs out in being self-critical more than planning. Everybody has their favorite
their own
place.
Thing. Mm-hmm.
But until we try to quiet down a little bit and slow our thoughts through practicing mindfulness, we don't even know that this is going on. It is so automatic that we can't even be aware of it.
Okay, so with that, how do you pitch this to a college student? Because in the past, when I've been sitting in sessions with college athletes, I'll give an example. I've tried, you know, I didn't call it mindfulness. It was relaxation techniques, basically, because I didn't know what I was doing with mindfulness, I'll be honest. And it's very hard to kind of get people to buy into this, to buy into that if you practice this, you will be able to master this and your anxiety or whatever, it will decrease. You know, it takes them a few times to do it, to actually see the benefits of it, and then that's the motivation. That's the reinforcer.
Yes. Yeah, and a couple of things I would think about that. One is that there are a couple of folks who have done work. One's a book called Mindfulness for the Next Generation.
Uh-huh.
A couple of folks who have done books for college-age students and younger. And, of course, we actually even have people teaching mindfulness now in elementary school,
yeah,
which is a whole other topic.
Yes.
But we really do different things with college students than we do with older adults who tend to come to mindfulness training.
Uh-huh.
Just trying to deal with that kind of intense need to kind of move and to let off steam. Mm-hmm. So we do different things with college students. But interestingly enough, on most of the college campuses where this has been attempted, just saying, we're going to help you learn a technique that will help you deal with stress any time of the day or night, and it's yours, it's free to you.
It's accessible,
it's accessible,
mm-hmm,
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That actually gets a good number of people to come and participate in some of the training programs. And then after that, it's quite often word of mouth. They'll go back to their dorm room or their apartment complex or their sorority or fraternity or whatever and say, you know, this stuff is really helping.
I know. Mm-hmm.
And so once we get that, whether we're teaching relaxation or mindfulness, then you can sort of have a steady flow of students coming in, learning.
Does how do I put this? Does mindfulness change the brain?
Yes, it does. It's very fascinating. And this is one of the
reasons.
Neuroscience-wise, mm-hmm, it does. And this is one of the reasons it's being touted so much, is because the researchers are seeing very disparate kinds of benefits in terms of people with high blood pressure, their blood pressure gets lower. High blood sugar, their blood sugar can get lower.
Yeah.
All different kinds of biological markers can change. And what we see when the researchers do PET scans and CT scans and really look at the neurological and electrical activity of the brain. People who go through, let's say, an 8-week training course with this and practice during that time will have an alteration in their brain chemistry and their brain actually even anatomy. Parts of the brain actually get larger. And that change remains a year later, even if they don't practice on a daily basis afterwards. It's like once they have tried to learn to be aware and mindful, they don't lose it, even if they don't do a formal practice every day. And so that's profound.
Yes, that's amazing. What are the challenges as far as working or trying to teach mindfulness? What are the challenges? Are people, are there skeptics?
Yes, I think there are, though, certainly less than I knew of in the late 80s and early 90s. Folks are sort of hearing from all kinds of different sources that mindfulness is helpful. I think that difficulties really are the rapid pace at which we live our lives. And so to say, am I going to take 20 minutes a day to do a formal practice, or even 10 minutes a day or 5 minutes a day, it's hard for people to find the self-discipline to do that practice. And so one of the things I do when I teach it is I encourage people to begin to do the practice, let's say when you're taking your morning shower, because most of us get in the shower, if that's our habit, and we're busy clicking off everything that has to be done. And we get out of the shower more upset and stressed than when we went in. And if we just concentrated on feeling those individual bits of water hit our skin, if we really are right there, that is an intense experience. And just being right present for those few moments is incredibly calming, immediately calming and centering. So it can be pretty powerful, even practicing just a little bit.
Are there any, you mentioned the book, Mindfulness for the Next Generation. Are there any, and while I was researching for the show, I came across a few apps for the phone because students have their phones with them all the time. So I like to give them some apps. Do you have any ideas for
Now, you know, I'm not good about the apps, but I will tell you, if you will Google mindfulness apps, or you could do it more specifically, mindfulness-based stress reduction apps, either way, you're going to get a range of, and some of them will be as simple as bells, meditation bells, ringing every once in a while to remind you to see, am I in the present moment or has my mind wandered?
Now, Dr. Myers has brought some, are they called bells?
Yes, bells. These are bells.
And explain what they're for.
Well, these are, the bells are holdover from the Eastern traditions, mostly Buddhist traditions. But in almost any contemplative practice that, was occurred in all religions historically, there is some auditory cue to say either begin your practice or just if you hear the bell is a reminder, oh, where is my mind right now? Has it wandered off onto some catastrophe story about this ache I have in my side that might be something horrible? Or can I just say, oh, I have a little bit of discomfort in my side. That's, you know, which is being in the present moment. So the bells are used, and I really like to use them in a practice setting because it means I give less verbal direction because I can remind people with the bell, are you in the present moment? Just check, where's your mind right now? Bring it back to right now. Could I play the bell just once?
Please do, because
I don't know what it's going to sound like on the air.
A bell. Because you did this with us. You did an exercise with us during the student affairs divisional meeting.
Yes.
And you used the bells, which, you know, at first you can be kind of a little bit skeptical, I will say. You know, and I'm a therapist, so I've been around techniques. But I think some people, until they actually go through it, they don't realize, wow, that was really beneficial. So, yes, go ahead with the bells.
So what I will do is just ring the bell, and then in just what I would invite you to do if you're listening is just tune in to what's going on in your breath, because it's nice to have sort of a focus for the present moment, and we have our breath every moment.
Mm-hmm.
We're either doing the in-breath or the out-breath. And so just for a moment, stick with your breath and notice what's happening.
Wow, there's an echo.
Yes, I like to let it go on. So just, if you will, stick with your breath. I don't know what time we have left, but stay with your breath for at least 3 full breaths. Just noticing what happens in your body as the breath goes in. You notice your belly's going to just protrude a little bit because your diaphragm is pushing down to allow the air to move in. And notice, you may notice the air right under your nostril. Feel it going in and going out if you concentrate sort of real in a focused manner. And just realize that when you're focusing so intently on the breath, you can't be criticizing, you can't be worrying, and you can't be regretting, because you're right present with the breath.
Perfect. That's cool. How have you been trained for this? Where did you get your training?
I went in the late 80s to a workshop given by Jon Kabat-Zinn, mm-hmm. who is sort of the guru of something called mindfulness-based mm-hmm. stress reduction. And the reason I went to that setting was that I wanted to learn a way to share. I had read some about it. And I knew that if I brought a psychological technique that felt too much like it was a religious practice, that it might make people a little hesitant.
Yes.
And so I really wanted to learn this as a psychological intervention. So I went to work to do a 10-day retreat with Kabat-Zinn. And it was a great, huge group of people. And there we were all practicing in a big room together, and there's real power in a group practice because it's like everybody here is working as hard as I am to stay in the moment, and every time any one of us is wandering off in our minds, we're working to say, oh, I wandered off, let me come back to this moment. And there's something very powerful about that. And so I spent 10 days there with a friend from Birmingham. And, of course, part of it was in silence, and so I learned about the power of just being
quiet
in the present moment mm-hmm. in silence. And that was my introduction. And since then, I've done various continuing ed workshops.
Uh-huh.
And I've gone to various meditation programs that are actually of a Buddhist nature or a Christian nature mm-hmm. that really helped me get sort of a broader scope of how might different people use this.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. Thank you so much for being on the show. I feel like this has gone by so fast, and now I'm so relaxed. And I've got a whole nother segment to do with Linda. Linda, you're going to get the
worst
of me.
She'll keep you relaxed, too.
Oh, my goodness. I really appreciate you being on the show. I don't even think we got to most of the questions that I wanted to get to. But you answered so many. Thank you again, and I appreciate it. This is fascinating.
Thank you for asking me. I really am invested in folks knowing about this, and thank you.
We'll be right back. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I am Dr. B.J. Gunther, and we are talking tonight about mindfulness. My second guest tonight is Linda Keys. She's the owner of the Yoga Center. Linda has been around, I don't know how long, forever, teaching yoga. Anybody knows Linda Keys, especially for her Yoga Center. And the way I really met you, Linda, is we've always, at the counseling center, we've always done a stress event, usually either around Christmas time or around May, April or May, you know, when the kids are about to, when the students are about to get out
dead
of school.
Week, finals
yes.
week, right.
And you
right.
have been so generous with your time and your skills to come and do massage therapy. And, I mean, I've seen the line be so long, and
yeah.
you have been, you know, doing massages for like hours at these events.
I
it's
love
exhausting.
Doing those events. It's a great way to introduce somebody to massage, to the benefits
exactly.
of it, just in that short 10-minute period of time.
Yeah, sometimes yeah. less than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into teaching yoga, and the connection between yoga and mindfulness.
Okay. You want my yoga background?
Yeah, give me your yoga background.
Well, I stumbled upon a yoga class when I was 17 years old at LSU.
Uh-huh.
I was looking for a fun class that would kind of balance out the heavier classes, and I was hooked immediately. I really got lucky. I was fortunate enough to have a serious teacher who took the practice seriously and made it fun, but the benefits were so obvious right away. And, you know, then anywhere I've lived, no matter what else I was doing at any particular time, I was always trying to find a place to continue my practice with teachers. And then when I lived in Atlanta, I was really fortunate to find a teacher, Alice Stevens, at Emory University.
Uh-huh.
And I studied with her. I lived in Atlanta for 10 years and studied
wow.
with her. Yes. It was so valuable. And so she's the person who really taught
like
me enough
mentor.
About the practice. She was my mentor, mm-hmm. enough to be a teacher. So I actually became a yoga teacher before there was certification or before yoga was the big popular wave
oh,
that came
yeah.
along.
I remember when I started here at Alabama back in the 80s, the greatest decade ever.
I agree.
I remember I took a class, they call it kinesiology now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I called it. It was like a physical education class. And I remember going up and asking the professor, is there anywhere that I could take yoga around here? And he did not know what yoga was. I mean, he wow. really, I know it. And it blew my mind. I'm from Birmingham, and I had always heard about yoga, you know, the benefits for your body and your mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, I mean, maybe you can agree with me on that. I think some people are frightened of yoga.
Yeah, I don't understand why, because if someone will open their mind enough to take one class,
I know.
They leave floating on air. They're
literally.
They're just astonished at the benefits, at how good they feel, and they realize somehow that it wasn't just a set of physical exercises. People sometimes think of yoga as stretching, just physical stretching.
And some people will call it that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's leaving out a huge component of the practice, really.
Explain then, tie yoga together with mindfulness.
To me, yoga is a mindfulness practice. That is the very nature of it. And I know there are some teachers who say that if you're not doing yoga mindfully, you're really not doing the practice of yoga. You're doing some nice physical
stretching.
Exercises. You're stretching, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does, Harriet said that to be mindful, it's helpful sometimes to have a focus. We start with the breath because it's always present.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the power of yoga is that you're using your body as the focus. So if you're paying attention to your breathing and to the placement of your body and to the comfort and the level of effort that you're putting into it, and it's not a strain and so forth,
mm-hmm.
your mind does not wander. And then you've done that for a whole hour before you know it. And so you've basically practiced mindfulness for an hour.
Doesn't it help to have a teacher, though, guiding you through it?
It does until you have an understanding of the practice. And once you have a good understanding of it, it's certainly something that people can do on their own. It's a great thing to do on your own at home as a practice.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask, is you've been doing this for most of your life. But as a novice, how long does it take someone to be able to master their mind not wandering if somebody's not there teaching them? You know what I mean?
I do. It depends on the person, of course, and the teacher.
I guess
but,
so.
Yeah, you know, but I think if you approach it that way and that's your intention, yoga is a very simple practice mm-hmm. at a basic level. You can do some really basic poses and do those same poses over and over again with the intention of paying attention.
So most people can do yoga.
I would say anybody can do
yoga.
Anybody
can do
sure.
yoga. Even with a physical handicap, a disability.
Absolutely.
A herniated disc.
Yes.
Something like
well,
that.
Well, if somebody's under a doctor's care uh-huh. for a physical issue like that, mm-hmm. I make sure to get a clearance from the doctor that it's okay for somebody to do yoga.
Exactly.
You know, but yeah, people with any kind of disability or illness actually can benefit from yoga because of the mindfulness benefits.
We're going to take a break right now, just briefly, but when we come back, I want to talk about the benefits, the physical and mental benefits that you've witnessed yourself from yoga.
Okay.
And practicing mindfulness. We're coming right back. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm BJ Gunther, and we're talking about mindfulness tonight. We've got Linda Keith, who's the owner of the Yoga Center. We're talking about yoga and the connection with mindfulness. And one of the things that Linda just mentioned to me during the break is the mind-body connection. Talk about that a little bit, and also the benefits that you've personally seen with people doing yoga.
From yoga.
Uh-huh.
The mind and the body are intertwined. They're inseparable. And our bodies reflect our emotional and mental experiences in a very literal way, a physical way. And so we have tended to segregate those two, I think, in the Western world. And we're learning now that that was a mistake.
Yes.
That really they when you work with one, you're working with the other automatically.
Uh-huh.
And I do body work also, and I find that all the time. People with physical issues a lot of times have a mental-emotional component to that. And so the benefits of yoga range from physical to mental to emotional to spiritual, if you're looking at it as a spiritual path.
Right.
One time we put a poster on the wall at the yoga center and a pen, and just said, write down what yoga has done for you. Tell us what
That's
you have.
That's a good idea.
Randomly, how have you benefited from yoga? And we expected, my back doesn't hurt anymore, my feet don't hurt, you know, something physical.
Mm-hmm.
There was not a physical comment on there, I don't think. It was things like, it helped me get through the death of a close friend.
Yeah.
It helped me learn how to calm my emotions myself, how to soothe myself. It made me more aware of how reactive I am.
So more emotional.
And self-observation. Yoga is a process, like meditation, of becoming familiar with ourselves, how the mind in general works, and also how my mind works.
Right.
Like Harriet said, where do my thoughts go? We each have a place where our thoughts tend to go. So you put an observer in place that can give you that information. And it's all done in a friendly, gentle, non-judgmental way. And yoga takes all of that out of it.
What other, besides yoga, what other services do you offer at the yoga center?
Just massage therapy.
Massage therapy?
I'm a massage therapist. And we, from time to time, have had other movement classes, that are kind of mindful in nature.
Yeah.
But typically just body work and the yoga. Several teachers.
Do you get many college students?
I work with a lot of college students
uh-huh.
in the massage practice, and students come and go with the yoga practice. They're checking it out. Some stay, some wander on.
It takes discipline, and
yes.
some, you know, with busy schedules, like Harriet was talking about, it's very difficult to try to work that into your schedule. But I think once it is worked into your schedule, you get almost addicted to it.
Yeah. Sometimes
it does
playfully
help so much.
It does help. Mm-hmm. You're right, and you see mm-hmm. that right away.
Exactly.
I tell people it has to be as important as eating when you start out, so that you yes. make yourself do it, and then you're right. You see the benefits very quickly.
Your body, right.
Yes, and it's self-rewarding. I mean, you see it, and then you kind of crave it in a way.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I've always looked at yoga as not necessarily physically, you know, like keeps you in shape or anything like that. I look at it more of a mental, like you were talking about, the mental and emotional impact that it has for people to kind of calm you down. People with anxiety disorders benefit exponentially with doing something like yoga or body work.
Yes. Anxious people and worriers, fretters, mm-hmm. which is a lot of people really, mm-hmm. Are helped a lot by a practice like that, that automatically removes those activities from the mind because you're focusing on something.
Yeah, and I have a lot of students who come to the counseling center with sleep problems. And I would think something, how much does yoga and the practice of mindfulness improve rumination? You know, they'll tell me when they lie down that they worry, like you said, and they ruminate and they obsess mm-hmm. over things that they've done during the day or that they've got yes. to do tomorrow and they can't sleep.
Yes. Yes. So. It is a practice and it is a discipline, and we have to view it that way, not in a harsh way, but just as work that we look forward to doing.
Yeah.
And we know that it's going to benefit us once we've started doing it. So it is a matter of you do have to practice it. It's not something you can do
every
and you get a certificate
a
and then you're done.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
You have to keep doing it to benefit from it.
Do yes. you actually get better at it? You
yes.
actually progress.
Yes, absolutely.
So there's a benefit to doing it over and over again. Not just the mental, physical. It's you get to another certain level.
You do, and well, mm-hmm. like Harriet talked about, there are changes in the brain that are measurable.
Yeah,
which are profound.
I should have known that and didn't.
It's true, and so it does become easier. We learn our minds, like I said, we
yeah.
learn what we're like, and we learn to see. Sometimes there's a somatic component to a reaction we're getting ready to have. You know, when we're getting ready to fire off some words we will wish we hadn't or something like
yeah.
that. And we come to recognize ourselves when we're out of kilter. I like the word equanimity. That's what yoga and meditation help us to develop. Being on an even keel.
Balanced,
uh-huh. grounded, and centered. And then we start to recognize very clearly when we're not that way. And now we have the tools to get back to that.
Yeah, to center yourself.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being on the show. I could talk about this for two more hours,
this
of course.
This was fun. Thank you very much.
Do you have a website?
I do.
A contact number for people who are listening and might be interested?
I do. I have two websites.
Okay.
The massage website is Lynda Keys, LyndaKeyes.com.
Okay.
And the yoga is yogatuscaloosa.com.
That's easy to remember.
Enough.
Thank
yes.
you so much. I'm going to make, before we go off the air, I'm going to make a few announcements. Don't forget that our show, including this one, will be recorded and podcasted on the Counseling Center's website at counseling.ua.edu. If you want to listen to past shows, just click on the Brain Matters icon. It'll take you to some of those shows. Tomorrow night, the Counseling Center is going to be sponsoring something called Me Too Monologues, an annual show about identity written, performed, and produced by members of the University of Alabama community. Students and faculty submit stories of their experiences, which are then performed anonymously by selected UA actors and documented on film. We began in 2009 at Duke University as a show focused primarily on race, ethnicity, and culture, but over the years, the project has expanded to cover topics of sexuality, class, gender, religion, disability, and community. And even these topics do not adequately define who we are. The event will be held this Wednesday, that's tomorrow night, March the 11th at 7 p.m. at the Ferguson Center. Another thing I want to announce, as part of the Counseling Center's activities during our Spring Suicide Awareness Week, our anchor event, the first annual UA Awareness Walk, Erasing the Stigma, will be held on Sunday, March the 29th, 2015 from 2 to 4 p.m. This this year, the UA Greek System partnered with the Counseling Center to host the first annual UA Awareness Walk. The mission of this walk is to raise awareness of the Counseling Center's resources available to students and how to access those resources and erase the stigma of accessing mental health services. So if you're interested in the walk will begin at the Counseling Center. That's 1101 Jackson Avenue at 2 p.m. and end at the Walk of Champions. On-site registration will begin at 1 p.m. on March the 29th. That's a Sunday at the Counseling Center. So thanks for your support in advance, and we hope to see you there. I just want to give a little shout-out to everybody who's made this show possible. Dr. Keyes, who's our Executive Director of the Counseling Center, Terry Siggers, the Office of Student Media, and my production assistants, Natalie and Dorothy Beck and Al Johnson, my colleagues at the Counseling Center, the WVUA staff, Vincent Palmer, who helps us put these shows on the Counseling Center website, and, of course, my guest tonight, Dr. Harriet Myers and Linda Keyes. We'll skip next week because it'll be spring break, so everybody be safe and have a good spring break. But then we'll be back on the 24th with a show about rejection and resiliency. That should be interesting. Thanks for listening tonight. Again, I'm Dr. B.J. Gunther. You've been listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.